everyone, Tazita here. This episode contains some topics and discussions that might not be suitable for all ages. My guest and I suggest those under the age of 16 to be heavily advised of topics that are discussed in this week's episode. Please note that this episode contains trigger warnings that will be placed throughout this episode. Topics include parental abuse and/or neglect, sexual abuse, rape culture, child trafficking, bestiality, sex between a human and animal, unconsensual sex, along with stronger language than in most other episodes. For anyone who might know someone who might be suffering from any topics mentioned or might like additional information and resources for their own knowledge, below in the description, there will be a list of phone numbers, additional information, and links for anyone who might like having them.
Penny, Penny, Penny.
I'm ready.
Book smash.
But Arbiter friend.
Am I not the captain of this ship?
You're a wizard, Harry.
Shadow Claw Jutsu.
Misty Messenger.
And the Billboard Music Award goes to...
Pikachu!
BTS!
Winter is coming.
But hello, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
Bye-bye!
Hello, 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 and welcome to Let's Talk Fandoms, a podcast where we talk about all things fandom. And today, we are back in the studio with Megan Pitts for part two of All Things Fan Fiction.
Hello, listeners. Long time no here. It's so good to see you again and be back on the podcast. I am so excited to be here again.
The amount of shenanigans that we got into with part one, I cannot wait to see what goes on in part two.
Oh, there was proper shenanigans, proper accounting for shenanigans happening.
We could only shenan again.
Oh, my God. All right. I think we should end our listeners and just go ahead, right?
I completely agree. Let's get back into fan fiction. Something that I know that I remember seeing in different fan fictions that I've read kind of throughout the years is it almost seems, and I don't want to say it's okay, but it almost seems accepted, just the act of like bestiality in fan fictions. And I know you and I before, which we will touch on again, have talked about my own kind of uncomfortableness with fan fictions that deal with real life people, yeah, versus like characters. And I've only come across a very limited amount of like bestiality-esque fan fictions that have that in it. But like, what are your thoughts on it? Because I want to know how we both think about this.
So bestiality is like the actual like act of having sex with an animal first and foremost. And almost always it's used in a legal context to show that the animal is not consenting. Mm-hmm. Like it's a situation where a human is taking advantage of an animal, so it's a gross thing. So in fan fiction universe, bestiality is renamed because bestiality has a, you know, a negative connotation to it. So then we have the furry. Furries are a byproduct of bestiality, but they are humanized to the point that it is distant enough that it's not straight up fucking an animal. Like, that's not, like, that's the furry mindset. I will, you know what? I'm not going to say that. I'm never going to be recorded as understanding the furry mindset, because I never will. but really, I've never encountered fan fiction where it's a human and an animal. I've seen fan fiction with animals, and then all of a sudden they are fucking, which was
okay.
It's pretty jarring. But for me, and I think for a large section of the fan fiction community, Sonic the Hedgehog fan fiction is the hub of furry fan fiction. Like, okay. It is a meme at this point. In actually Sonic Boom, Do you know Sonic Boom?
Yeah.
Sonic Boom, for those who don't know, is an animated series. They made a really terrible game out of it in like 2016. Was it 2016 or 2014? I can't remember. It was so bad. It was the worst game ever. And they Sonic Boom actually made a reference to Sonic fanfiction. So Sonic Boom, a televised series on television, referenced Sonic fanfiction.
Mm.
That's how much of a known cultural reset Sonic fanfiction was. Maybe not in the best way possible,
yeah.
But I know that my first interaction with fanfiction with animals was Sonic. And I think that's because Sonic has anamorphized characters.
Yeah.
Like, they're not directly animals. They still very much have they have hands. You know, like, hedgehogs don't have hands.
Right.
But, like, I think that's what made it, like, I guess, okay for people to write that. I don't read Sonic fanfiction anymore because it is all sex. It is all sex.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
And I think there's a reason for that, probably. I mean, there's one character, like, Rouge the Bat has cleavage in the show. Like, that is candid, like, art.
Oh.
Sally, I don't even know what Sally... I think Sally's a squirrel. She's from, like, the 90s. Like, that was Sonic's first love interest, was Sally. Sally Acorn. Her name's Sally Acorn, so she has to be a squirrel. So she had cleavage, too. So, like, there's sexualized animals in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to lend to sexualized thoughts about animals, which I cannot say I have or ever have.
Well, did you ever see Space Jam?
Yes. Oh.
The way that they sexualize, what's her name? Lola. Yeah, Lola Bunny is...
She's still sexualized.
outrageous. Yes. But I do know that Space Jam was supposed to be a movie for children. Like,
yes.
Specifically targeted towards children.
Yes, and that definitely was a thing in the 90s, was, like, sexualized animals.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed that it's not happening as much anymore. Ratatouille is a good example of this. Actually.
Yes.
Ratatouille did not sexualize any of the animals in it. They just went by real anatomy. Female rats are smaller than male rats.
Yeah.
So that's how they would differentiate females and males. There's actually a theory that Ratatouille is trans because he's smaller.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was like, well, that's awesome. I feel like that's kind of leaving right now as furries are becoming more acceptable in society right now.
You remember the Disney show Brandy and Mr. Whiskers?
I sure do. It's all coming back to me right now. Oh, boy.
So, I remember watching that, and I think I was still pretty young. I think I was end of middle school, early high school, potentially, that it came out. But I remember seeing that and loving that they didn't put boobs on Brandy and thinking that was really smart.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they were moving away from that. But I think they did that as a way to let the audience know this is supposed to be a female character. I mm-hmm. don't think the intention was to sexualize. I think the intention was to be like, oh, you need to know that this is a woman. Like, you need to know this is a woman. Now, is the basis of that sexual? I don't know.
Right.
Like, is the basis of you needing to know this is a woman so that you can later sexualize her? I don't know. That leads into the whole Rule 34 discussion, which, sheesh, you could do a whole podcast on that. Like, do you know Rule 34?
I do not.
So, oh, no. Rule 34 is there's a list of rules on the internet. Rule 34 is the most notorious of them all. It's the one where you openly sexualize a character. So you draw them, like, in a sexual manner, like naked, having sex.
Oh.
And this applies to character. So Pokemon have been Rule 34'd, animals have been Rule 34'd, real people have been Rule 34'd. No one is safe from Rule 34. So, like, every time I remember Pokemon they released a new character design for their most recent game release, which was Sword and Shield. And it's a character that's a cream puff. And I was like, this is so cute. And then I saw the realized evolution, and it was like a female-inspired cream puff form. And I was like, oh my god, this is going to get Rule 34 to death.
Oh no.
And I don't like that that was my first thought. there's a specific Pokemon that gets Rule 34 so much. It's called Gardevoir. It's a really pretty design. It's beautiful design Pokemon. It's not sexual at all. It has slight like cleavage, but like it's like a fin kind of situation, but it's not like boobs. It's like a just a protruding like part of the body.
Okay.
It's not actual boobs.
Right.
I feel like I'm trying to justify myself. but like that character has been Rule 34 to death. To the point that, like, the actual design, like, I just don't even want to look at it anymore. Like, it's so bad. Isabelle from Animal Crossing is Rule 34 to death as well.
So, I actually just looked up Rule 34, and...
Oh, no!
No, I'm just looking at definitions of it.
Okay.
And, yeah. And, so what I found on Urban Dictionary, as well as on Slang Dictionary, is Rule 34 means, if it exists... there is porn of it. No exceptions. Which is terrifying to me.
I don't think that's the rule. I think, like, the act of Rule 34 is, like, okay, fine, maybe. I think Rule 34 is, like, describing that porn exists, but I think it has also evolved into a verb, that you are Rule 34
or something. Yeah, exactly. Like,
because, you know, we get more stuff every single day. And I guess there's a book called Rule 34.
Oh god.
Oh, okay.
There are also flashcards.
I'm sure there are.
What is this?
Well, like you can see as I'm Googling it, there are so many other rules of the internet.
Oh yeah. That would be a whole different episode of just looking at different rules. Ugh.
But Rule 34 is 100% the most notorious one. I don't even know how I got into Rule 34.
Oh!
Right, bestiality. Okay, so so animals are not safe from being Rule 34 either. But I do not like bestiality fanfiction. That being said, I don't think it's hurting anybody. Like, but right. Also... you never know if it hurts anybody until somebody's hurt. So right. It's a vicious cycle. I don't get anything out of it, honestly. Like, I've seen people draw Sonic characters as humans, but, like, it doesn't really do anything for me. Like, I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know. Like, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. But, I will say this. So, there was a recent anime that just came out. It's called Beastars. Okay. It's fantastic. It's such a good story. It's an animal society. There are carnivores and there are herbivores.
Okay.
And they have to coexist. But they can't. Like, carnivores are more like, carnivores have to take like these supplements to like tone themselves down the point that they've been able to coexist in society with herbivores. There is a boarding school, which is the main location of the story, where a carnivore kills an herbivore. Like it kills a carnivore student kills and eats an herbivore student.
Oh no.
So the whole story is trying to figure out, it's a whodunit story.
Oh, I love it.
But it's also about a wolf named Legacy, who is... I love Legacy so much. Oh. He's a wolf, but he's so soft and sweet. And he just wants... Everyone's terrified of him because he's a wolf. Like, he's an apex predator. Yeah. But he's so sweet and caring and understandable and just, like, the nicest character. And he meets this bunny named Haru, who...
Literally... So, I was... When you first mentioned a wolf, I was thinking of Zootopia. And then you literally mentioned a bunny, and I was like, it's literally Zootopia.
You know what? Legacy's nothing like Nick, though. Like, nothing. Like, nothing like him at all. And Haru is nothing like Judy, and I will explain why. So, as you know, bunnies reproduce a lot.
Yes.
They're known for having sex a lot.
Oh,
Haru is a slut.
Oh.
She is the school slut.
Cool.
Like, they, and like, they do, there is two instances of sex in the story, but it's not reliant on it.
Okay.
Like, it's part of the character development.
Right.
Like, it's not hardcore sex. It's part of the characters, like, in the story. They're just using animals as, like, it would not be able to be told if it weren't animals, because it's,
gotcha,
it's a carnivore and herbivore story.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you could say, well, they wrote the story so they could have animal sex in it. Maybe they did. I don't know. I don't watch it for the animal sex. I skip the animal sex. Like, I don't care. Like, there's only two instances of it. So, like, I don't care. But Haru is the school slut, and Legoshi, his carnivore animalistic instincts are activated whenever he's around her, but that's his way of realizing he's in love with her. So, like, there's, this inability to, like, tear them apart for him. Like, he can't be in love with her and also not want to kill her at the same time. So it's him wanting to be close to her the entire story, but he can't because he's going to kill her if he does. So it's this constant balance of him trying to figure out, like, oh my God, how am I supposed to, like, let this, this girl know that I like her,
right,
without killing her? And it's this whole, this whole metaphor for, like, toxic masculinity, how, like, you're not allowed to own this person. Like, you're not allowed to, like, decide what's best for, but because he's so in love with her, he's like, I need to be with you, but she doesn't want that,
right?
So, like, he has to, like, there's this whole scene where, like, he almost eats her, but he takes a step back, and he's like, oh my God, I almost let my instincts get the best of me. So it's a whole metaphor, like, for that whole thing of, like, men aren't able to control themselves. If a wolf can control himself from not eating somebody, then a man can control himself from not assaulting a woman.
Exactly.
So that's it's such a good story, but it has animal sex in it, which is why, like, a lot of people don't want to watch it. It's beautiful animation. The characters are great. And the story is, I'm so involved in the story now because it's a murder mystery. It's like all this is happening around you while it's also a murder mystery. And there's also this whole, like, commentary on, like, whose part in society is what. Like, there's a new wolf girl that comes into, she's a freshman wolf girl in the story, and she immediately attaches herself to Legoshi because they're apex predators. And in order, because she wants carnivores to take back over, so she feels that she needs to latch onto Legoshi so they can be a power couple and then eventually take over the world again.
Oh. Like,
evil, but Legoshi doesn't want that. He doesn't, like, he wants a coexisting society where he's not seen as a predator. He just wants to be seen as Legoshi. So, like, it's awesome, and I would, even though you don't like animal sex, I would recommend it because you
what's
can
see what's it called again?
It's called Beast Stars. So, like, Beast Stars. And then STARS, like BEASTARS.
Okay.
Yeah. Episode 9 is probably the most sexual out of all of them.
Okay.
But it is crucial in understanding, like the story. Like, I feel like I'm not a furry, I swear. Like, like, when I explain this anime to people, I'm like, you have to understand that I'm not a furry. I'm not. Like, I don't agree with this, but the story is just so good that I just don't want to look away. So there are instances where, like, I will read stories with animals, like, relations in it, but, like, sex, I will go away. Like, I don't want to read it.
Well, and I bring up the question because, so in the new, I can't even call it new, what am I talking about? But in the show Black Mirror, the very first episode, there is all of this build up to bestiality.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen it, but it's basically it's a politician who is being blackmailed almost to the umph degree, and like the society knows what's happening and they know that like he has to make a choice. And I think it's like he either has to have sex on camera with, I think it's a pig.
Oh, that's where that comes from. Yes.
Yeah. Or there's this person that I can't remember if there's like a girl that's been held hostage, or there's some other like really big stake. And the episode itself, because I am obsessed with Black Mirror and I recommend it to everyone because specifically because of the social and political topics that it covers that I think are just so important to look at.
It's on Netflix, everyone. So
yes, it is on Netflix. Go watch it. Also, Bendersnatch is on Netflix. Go watch that. Play around with it. Super fun. But I think that episode is so good. And when I tell people to like watch Black Mirror, I always say, make sure to watch the first episode and get through it.
This is what this is exactly what I mean. When it's used, when it's used as a device, as a plot device, and it's not simply gratuitous, that's when there's opportunity to be like, okay, this is a really good story. And I think the same thing applies to Beastars. Like the whole, like sex in Beastars is synonymous with being in power. And I think that's what they're trying to use in this carnivore herbivore society. So in Black Mirror's case, using sex as a way to overpower this person, like, like it's not just because they want to see him have sex with a pig. They want to humiliate him.
Right. And in the show, I mean, obviously spoiler alerts again, but he ends up having sex with this pig, and as people are watching it, they're very disgusted. And then after a while, it's just, they can see that obviously it's something that he is not enjoying. Obviously it is something that is utterly just traumatizing.
Right.
And so society then, or I can't even say society, but the community there is very understanding of like what it is that this politician is doing for the nation. And I think it's just so important to look at that. And I guess I really bring up kind of the bestiality topic because in college, there was a fan fiction that I came across where I loved reading Aragon. I loved the books.
Okay.
I mean, obsessed. And I came across a fan fiction that dealt with true bestiality between main characters that made me extremely uncomfortable, and the writing of it and even the comments for it seemed very nonchalant, seemed very positive of the recognition of it. And I didn't know if that was something that's common in the fan fiction community.
In that subsector of fan fiction, yes, it is. And again, it's that comfort level. Like, you know you're not going to be judged if you find this interesting and entertaining to read. Just reading it is not hurting anyone. Like, I don't want to judge anyone. Like, it's not something for me until it actually starts happening in real life, which I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's happening, and like I don't want to hear about it, period.
Right.
But like, it's that level of comfort. We have to wonder if there's something dangerous about it, and like if it's going to endanger people. And that goes for bestiality, rape, sexual assault. Like, why are we, like, there was a certain point in when I was reading fan fiction where if it didn't have rape in it, then I did not want to read it. And that's something that's really scary to say out loud.
Right.
Because why was I looking for it?
Yeah.
Why did I want to read it? Why was it so common for people to write about it? And like, that's something that I've had to come to terms with. I had a very warped perception of what romance was, which was men forcing themselves. Like, if a man forces himself on me, that's romance. That was my idea of what romance was. But like, as I'm growing older, and there have been instances where I've seen men force themselves on other women and just seeing how uncomfortable they are, I'm like, and men forcing themselves on me, it's a situation where, like, why would I ever find this romantic? As it's happening to me, it's scary and terrifying, and why are we letting people write about it? Like, why are we letting people write about it and agree with it and think it's romantic? So at that, like, when you see people agreeing with it in the comments, it's like they're not hurting anyone when they're writing the comments, but what's going to happen when they step away from the computer? Like, is it going to impact their psyche to the point that they're going to want to reenact it in real life?
Yeah, and I'm really glad you talked about that, because a big debate in the fandom organization was when we were talking about fan fiction and fan art competitions, we really, as like the heads of the organization, had to come together and talk about what are things that we are not going to allow to have. Because especially with the fandom art, it was posted on our like organization's Facebook page so people could vote. The fan fiction competitions, we had people from the organization as well as professors who would read the fan fictions and then cast their own votes. So it had to be, you know, what is the line and where do we, as the people who have to make that line, where do we stand and how do we still make it fair for everyone else? And a big topic was, how do we handle smut and how do we handle the levels and the extent of it? And I know that there was one person specifically on our team that was like, you know, we shouldn't corral people into a specific way of writing. Whereas for us, or at least for me specifically, it was, I am not comfortable having people write about inappropriate harassment, assault type of scenes that, although they are written and interpreted in one way, I don't ever want that to have someone else see it and instantly become uncomfortable.
Right.
But I think you're absolutely right that writing it is a way of almost expressing it and letting it out, and doesn't initially mean that you're acting on it or that you approve of the actual act. It then kind of comes to light of like, you know, what do you do after?
Exactly. And what's so scary about the line is that, where is the difference between someone writing out a rape fantasy and an incel writing out a rape fantasy?
Yeah.
There's no line. Like, and we, like, incels have been, they are not labeled as a terrorist group, but they have been identified as a group for women to stay away from, because they're writing out these fantasies where they are raping them and mass murdering them. But that, people have been writing fan fiction about this for years.
Exactly.
So like, where, like, do we need to seek them out too? It's different with incels because they're an established community. Like, they have a name and everything.
Yeah.
But like with fan fiction writers that are writing these really terrible, awful things, but they see it, they identify it as romance. There has to be a conversation that has to be had there, especially for when I was younger and reading these things and understanding these things as romance, because it was established as, it had romance in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
So it was established as romance. So, which leads to a really warped perception for me of what romance was, and therefore allowing men to get away with certain things that they should not have. So like, where is the, that's a whole censorship thing again. Like, where do we censor? Like, what is limiting creativity? And of course there are books out there that are like, I can't remember what it's called. There's a book out there that if you purchase it, you're put on a government watch list. It's like, it's a book about white supremacy, where it's about a neo-Nazi who rapes and pillages his way to the top. So like, it's like a laid out plan for how he's going to do it. So if you buy it, the government will know. So right. Like, is that something that's like, is there more monitoring required on fanfiction websites? Like, are people that are acting out these things influenced by fanfiction? Like, how are we able to figure that out? Because it's kind of a, like a little bit of a lawless society on fanfiction at this point in time, because it's a relatively new phenomenon, at least on the internet. But like, There's definitely a conversation to be had about the normalization of sexual assault, as well as the association of sexual assault with romance. Like, the selling your daughter as a slave to Harry Styles is putting her in a dangerous domestic situation, which almost always ends in sexual assault.
Right.
And that's recent. That's a very recent thing. Like, that's been happening. So like, where do we put the cap on that? But like, or is it hurting anyone? Like this whole concept of like, we are freedom to write about something, especially in America. Mm-hmm. Like where do we put the cap on that? And is it hurting anybody? And how are we supposed to know if it's hurting anybody? Because it's happening everywhere.
Right.
So that's going to be something in fan fiction that I feel like is just never going to have an answer. Because even now, like, rape is a tag. Rape is a tag on Archive of Our Own. Sexual assault. Dubious consent is a tag on Archive of Our Own. So while it's a fantastic platform where anyone can write, it's a dreadful platform where everyone can write. So when you see tags like that, should you be flagging the user? Like, should the user have warnings? Should there be a way to, like, there are ways you can report stories, you can report users and everything.
Right.
But it's the same function as reporting someone on Twitter. Like, they just kind of, they get deactivated or, like, they get suspended. But, like, does the law need to be involved? Like, that's the question.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, like, there has to be wiggle room for someone to write a law like that. And since it's not taken seriously as a medium, I don't think there's going to be anything like that soon unless someone gets hurt.
And I do think that even the idea of, like, creating a law or creating a system to almost monitor people, my concern is using, like, the First Amendment to then almost placate the idea of, like, well, this is my right to be creative and to write what I want. And I think that's where things get really touchy and really you have to almost, I don't want to say you, well, obviously you can't be hands-off about it, but almost like you have to be very, very careful when handling these type of situations.
You have to be reliant on the community, mm-hmm. and you have to have a good security team. So Twitch has a relatively good security team, but they've been under some flack recently.
Yep.
I think this person was black. They said the N-word on their Twitch stream, and they were taken down.
Oh.
But there are white people and non-black people saying the N-word on Twitch all the time, and they're not being taken down.
Uh-huh.
So there is an attempt at monitoring speech on Twitch that's happening, but it's just, well, Twitch is just a gigantic platform, so it's impossible. So, like, finding people that are potentially dangerous, it's really up to you if you see it when it's on the internet, which is not the most sustainable mode of action ever, because if you see something weird, I know when I see something weird, my first thought is not to tell somebody. I'll usually just kind of go, like, I'll just exit out, be like, no, I don't think I want to read that. Like, I don't want to go out of my way and be like, I'm going to report this, I'm going to email the website owner, I'm going to, like, that's never really the thought process for me.
Right.
And I don't think that's the thought process for a lot of people, unless you're actively trying to cancel somebody. I don't think that's the thought process. So, like, it involves a community and it involves a diligent security team, which fanfiction does not have right
now. Yeah.
And I don't think it ever will. Because anybody can decide what's bad. Like, we're honestly at this point with, like, traditional book media, I think we're just waiting for the censorship wave to happen. If it hasn't happened already.
Yeah.
There are going to be fanfictions that are going to be blacklisted. There are going to be authors that are going to be blacklisted. Like, it's just traditional book media, but it's just happening on a different platform.
Right.
The same thing, like, the same actions are being done, the same type of people exist on the platform. So I don't know how they would be able to do that on the internet, but it's only a matter of time until Archive of Our Own has, like, a list of people, like, that, like, they shadow ban people. I don't know if Archive of Our Own has a function like that. I know Twitter does, but, like, if they start shadow banning people, like, do you know what shadow banning is?
I am not aware of it.
Okay. So shadow banning is when the website itself notices something in your account activity and makes you unseeable on the platform. So, like, if you're on Twitter, it's dumb. If you tweet too many things in a row, Twitter can shadow ban you because it's seen as, like, robot activity. Like, if you tweet the same picture over and over again, they'll shadow ban you for a bit. And there are, like, conspiracies that certain celebrities and certain YouTubers are shadow banned because, like, they draw in negative attention and everything. There's no, like, actual written out guidelines on how YouTube shadow bans people, but shadow banning is something that companies can do. Like, they can make content unseeable. If they decide, if they receive enough reports about it, or if they are able to detect with their AI technology that something is a little weird. So, like, if that were to happen in the fan fiction universe, if it hasn't happened already, I think that would definitely lend to saving people from being exposed to that type of information. If I wasn't exposed to those fan fictions that were like really, really bad, like I feel like I would have had a better idea of like what romance is and like what real consent is and what love is. Mm-hmm. So like maybe like that would be good for as kids are growing up understanding what consent is, because kids can't consent. They'll be able to better understand if those things are hidden away from them. But like, again, who gets to decide that?
Right. And also, like, how do you keep a child from seeing something, especially online? Yes. Because, and I think you touched on it a little bit before, even me as like 12, 13, 14 would go onto websites and just click a button and say, yep, I'm 18.
Yeah.
Or put in a fake year that I was born. Yep, I'm of age.
I went on Barefoot's website the wine company, Barefoot.
Yeah.
And they were like, just so you know, you're getting digitally carded. I was like, okay. And then I just pressed okay. This was recent, like a week ago. And I was like,
all right.
I was like, okay. And then I just pressed okay and I was on the website. Like,
what does that even mean?
I don't know. I was like, I'm 24, but also if I were 13 and had my parents' credit card, I could 100% just order a bottle of wine right now.
Yes.
So like the internet is still a relatively new thing. So finding security measures around things like that is going to be tough, especially since the internet just continues to grow and people continue to be smarter on the internet. But like the whole being able to be free to write whatever you want that's always existed. Mm-hmm. But with, unlike traditional book media where you have the publication company to stop you, you don't have anyone to stop you.
Right.
So that's not stopping anybody from publishing their own manifesto of sorts in the form of a fan fiction. Fan fiction.
Yeah. Speaking of publications,
okay.
Or even publishing, let's talk a little bit about, do fan fictions need to be published in order to be seen by people? Or do you think it's important to have fan fictions published? Because I don't.
This is a multifaceted subject.
Yeah.
So fan fiction, I'm gonna begin with this. Fan fiction is mostly written by women. And there is a reason why it's mostly written by women. Because women, until the 20th century, were not taken seriously as writers. They were almost always having to adapt to how men write. They would have to compromise with how men write. Virginia Woolf wrote a really good speech on this called The Professional Woman, or like Professional Women, something like that. And it was about how she felt like she needed to be kind and open and, you know, feminine to be taken seriously as a writer. And she was reviewing a man's work, and she felt like she wasn't allowed to be her creative self when reviewing it, because she felt as a woman she had to be, you know, well, this man is just so great, I'm very happy to be able to review this man's work, and I'm going to, as a woman writer, I'm going to learn a lot from him, and I'm going to take whatever I can from him. She was talking about her struggle with that as she was becoming a writer as a woman. And it's it's a whole thing called like the angel in the house, where like a woman has to be perfect and cherubic and pure,
right.
And can't have flaws, can't talk about her problems, can't write about her problems. God forbid she writes about her problems. So fan fiction being published is kind of a way of reclaiming how women are to be taken seriously as writers. However, the fan fictions that we see being published are almost always used as a way to target women for being obsessed with sex fantasies, unrealistic fantasies, toxic fantasies of what men should be, of what they want men to be. So it's kind of a setup in a way to have fan fictions, at least the ones that they're going after, to be published. So I don't think it's necessary to be published, because at the end of the day, what does being published mean? It just means that you have a company behind you now who
right.
is telling you what you should be writing. And like we talked about, the writer for Nancy Drew, that mm-hmm. happened to her, and she lost her passion for writing. Yeah. And ultimately, I don't think it's that fan fiction needs to be published. It's the author getting to decide what they want for him or herself. And the fan fictions that we're seeing, I remember when 50 Shades of Grey was first announced as a published work, and fan fiction was just like no one ever wanted to say they read fan fiction, because the assumption was that they were reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
And that led to this whole like silencing, like no one wants to talk about fan fiction anymore. But it's not all that fan fiction is. And I remember on my fan fiction account, I went on this humongous rant about how, like, I just know that there are amazing writers on this website who deserve to be published, just like E.L. James was published, and they have amazing creative ideas, and they're not going to be ever taken seriously again, because this is the biggest fan fiction that's been published ever, and it's so badly written, and it's bad. I'm like, I'm never going to defend 50 Shades of Grey ever. It's fan fiction. It's great that she was published and that she has a career and that she made money, but she is not a good writer, period. The most frequent word that she used is the word said. Like, he said, she said. Said is the most interchangeable word in the English language. There are so many different ways that you can say said. Not good. Not good writing, period. But that wasn't the intention of 50 Shades of Grey. Was not to evoke. It's not intended to be literature. It's just intended to, for want of a better word, jerk off to. Like, it's literally just a sex book, which is not a bad thing, but when it's the first big release as a fan fiction, that suddenly makes every other fan fiction seem like it's just going to be that, which is really narrow-minded thinking, but that's just how it's going to happen, because it was marketed as a fan fiction turned book.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
So many people, after the book got a lot of hype and popularity, when I talk to people about, like, yeah, I read fan fiction, the most common, not even question, but just things spoken to me specifically was like, oh, so it must have a lot of sex in it. And for me, it was like, no, like, you don't know anything about fan fiction. What do you know? Why would you think that? And of course, it's because 50 Shades of Grey has gotten so much hype over publication, which is great. But then it gives kind of outsiders this very narrow-minded track and thought that this must be everything in fan fiction.
Which is due in part to the marketing.
Yes.
The marketing was very, like,
terrible.
Sex-driven. It was sex-driven marketing. It's not sex all the time. In the movie, sex barely happens.
Hardly ever happens.
A lot. In the book, sex hardly happens. It's a lot of build-up. It's a lot of exposition. It's a lot of trying to figure out why Christian Grey is this weird, demented man who needs women to be submissive to him, and then you find out he has weird Mrs. Robinson problems. I don't know where I was. It's not all sex, which is, like, really funny to write. And I also just want to say, I am pro writing about sex. Write about sex all you want.
Exactly.
Like, I think we need more. TBH, good, at least good writing. Like, good.
I think
writing.
We need more sex scenes in the way that almost, like, educates people. Exactly. And that's the thing.
Healthy sex scenes.
Like, healthy romantic sex scenes.
There is nothing healthy about 50 Shades of Grey. It's all submissive. It's all manipulative.
Yeah.
It's abusive. It's an abusive relationship.
That's what it is.
They pad it with a helicopter and a car and, like, not good sexual tension. Like, it's not a good sex story, period. So you go there for sex, there's barely any sex, and it's not even good sex. So
you go there for romance, there is none.
it's not romantic at all. Like,
no.
He is abusive. Like, he is a bad man. Bad. So bad. So this is, like, So the whole thing about Fifty Shades of Grey also lends into the whole discussion about women writing about sex.
Mm-hmm.
So women writing about sex, sheesh, that is not a thing. Like, literally, like, women are supposed to not know about sex until they see a man for the first time. That's the mentality that we have. Like, as soon as we see, even if you're gay, even if you're a lesbian, you're not supposed to know, or a pan, even if you're pan, you're not, as a woman, if you are a cis woman, you are not supposed to know what sex is until a penis is in front of you. That is what sex is. So a woman writing about sex, even if we don't know if she's seen a man or not, is out of pocket and weird and taboo. It's weird. So for women to write about sex already is kind of like a weird social thing to happen. But it also, like, fan fiction has allowed women like E.L. James and whoever the writer of After is to, and The Kissing Booth, to write about sex in a way that doesn't require a looming male presence. Now, is the male presence very evident in how they write sex? Yes, 100% it is. Like, After is all about losing your virginity, and after you lose your virginity, it's like the man you lose your virginity to is your whole life. That's a problem. Yes, that's a problem. But it's a woman writing it.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so weird and out of pocket. Men have been writing about women losing their virginity to them for centuries.
So long.
Centuries. And it's just been normal. It's so normalized to the point that if a woman writes about it, it's weird because only men are supposed to write about it.
Ugh.
And, like, the ability, like, women being able to be sexual and write about their sexual experiences is super liberating and something that fanfiction has been able to give to us as women. Like, we don't have to wait for a man to show up to have sexual thoughts. Like, right. We're able to do it by our own volition. But there's, you can see, especially in older fanfiction, you can see how women are still under this impression that a penis will change their life. And, like, that's a problem, right? But I think it's starting to fix itself a little bit.
Yeah.
In Archive of our Own, there's definitely way healthier sex written on there. I can't really comment on how homosexual sex is written because I don't read that much. I can only comment on cis heterosexual, like, sex in books, because that's the only ones that I've read.
Right.
And the common theme is that the man is dominating and the woman is submissive.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's typically how sex is written, but it's different because a woman is writing about it.
Yeah.
And the woman is able to decide, like, a woman is able to, like, this is very explicit. Oh, my God. But, like, a woman is able to come three times.
Right.
Whenever a man is having sex with her in her stories.
Right.
When a man is writing a story about a woman having sex with her, it's only about him coming.
Yeah.
Or it's about her coming a million times.
Exactly.
It's never realistic. It's always about how, like, he is able to change her with his penis. Change her whole world. There are definitely more now where, like, women will have casual sex and it doesn't affect them.
Right.
But you can tell they're written by women. Mm-hmm. There's no man on earth that is writing that. Like, period.
Yeah.
There's no man that's like, oh, she just had sex with me once and now I'm gone. Usually it's like, she had sex with me and I'm never, ever going to leave her alone again. Like, that's usually, that's usually how it's written. So, while books like Fifty Shades of Grey, The Kissing Booth, After, have allowed women to write about sex and have it be published, have it be normalized that women can write about sex, it's still very much the type of sex that a man wants to read.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the problem with publishing books like these, is that it's still normalizing how men want cis heterosexual women to understand sex as. So that's a problem. Now, the books that are not like that, the books that have regular sex in them, like a regular couple, like waking up on a Sunday morning or just like an anniversary night or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to publish that because it's not a spectacle. It's right. not engaging. It's not entertaining. But there are so many fan fictions out there like that, that are just like a regular Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Or like, I know it wasn't Smut, but I wrote a fan fiction about a couple who's slowly like fading apart. Like they're fading apart and they don't know it. Well, the girl knows, but the guy is kind of like too engrossed in his work to like see it.
Yeah.
So I wrote a story called Sunday where like they're in their world, everyone has off on Sundays and they're able to do whatever they want, but he doesn't take off on Sundays because he's so engrossed in his work. So she's trying to like get him to be excited about being with her, but he doesn't see it as being with her. He sees it as just time away from his job.
Yeah.
So it's all dialogue based. So like there's descriptors, but like it's dialogue based, and you can just tell how she's slowly just realizing he is not in love with her anymore. And like that's something that would never be published.
Right.
Because it's boring. Like it's boring to talk about like domestics. It's boring to talk about how like a woman is trying like her hardest, who's actually in love and not feeling like she has to, is actually in love trying to win her husband back. Like that's boring. Like you want her to be crying. You want her to be like throwing herself on the floor. You want her to be like throwing her nude body at him, or like you want him to like beat up somebody, or like, you know, like they're like, it's too boring.
Which is so just unrealistic for an everyday action.
Yes.
And granted, I understand that like movies and books are almost always there to be meant as hyper of
hyper-realization.
Like, right, yeah, hyper-realization of emotions and actions that are happening every day. But I gotta be honest, there are times that I'm just like, I need you to chill out.
I can't relate to anything in the kissing booth.
Right.
Like, nothing at all. Like, I remember I watched it, and I was like, I am no way rooting for the guy. The guy, like, can go fuck himself. Like, he's a weirdo. Like, he's only motivated because she is a girl.
Uh-huh.
In proximity to him. That's literally the only reason. You don't know why he likes her.
Well,
it's because she's just around her. Like, that's literally it.
And that's the thing, is like, I totally understand as a viewer being, you know, thrown into this situation that's already happening. I think that's great. But for me, the kissing booth, you're thrown into the situation, nothing is happening. And then all of a sudden, the brother is very much interested in her. And I'm like, but you guys have known each other literally forever. And now...
What happened was he only showed interest after another guy showed interest in her.
Exactly.
And the way he showed interest was not by telling her. He told every guy in the school to not ask her out.
Uh-huh. It's just...
That's toxic as fuck. Like, that's so bad.
It's just so terrible.
Which is why, like, is it good that fanfictions are published? No, because they're only looking for fanfictions like these. Like, they're not looking for the ones that are resembling of real life and, like, maybe an interaction I had with someone in a coffee shop one day. I just wanted to write an experience with these certain characters that I know and like put them in their place. Like, they only want these really gross romanticized stories that we've seen over and over again. And like, they just want to find what they've put on screen before, but just be able to say it's from a fan fiction writer. And also it just has like, you know, a million reads on it, or like it's gained popularity or notoriety or both.
Right.
But like, I would say it's not good for fan fictions to be published because it's always these. It's always the bad ones. It's always the ones that don't know how to write, that don't know how to create. They just use sex as a way to build a world around. They build a world around sex. That's what they do. Which, fine, sex sells. But like, I find something else.
Right. Like, honestly, just anything else.
There are so many writers out there that are doing what published writers wish they could do without a team, without an editor, like without like a partner to support them. Like, there are children that are writing better stories on all of these websites than grown adults.
Yeah.
Like, find them, figure out what they're doing, and see how you can get them more seen.
Yeah.
Not traditionally, more seen, like get more people to read their works. And of course, if people want to make a living off of writing and be involved with a company or an agent, that's great. Like, that's it's a fantastic avenue. But if you're only looking for a certain type of person, a certain type of writer, a certain type of genre, plot device, you're going to be very limited, and you're going to just keep bringing out these very terrible movies. Yeah. Publications, books, ideas about like what we're supposed to be looking for in high school or in life in a man, stuff like that. Why is it always romance? Like, why can't it be science fiction? Like, why can't it be drama? Why can't it be friendship?
Yeah.
And of course, like, there was that whole era of John Green. You like John Green though, right?
Love John Green.
Okay. I don't like John Green. And I have several reasons why. he very much normalized the manic pixie dream girl to the point that girls feel like they have to harbor all emotional labor of a man, regardless. They have to have all the answers. They have to be snarky. They have to be perfect always. They always have to be on. They can never be off. And when they're off, it's used as a point of contrast. It's not just them existing. It's a plot device. So, like, the manic pixie dream girl is very much at the fault of John Green. So, like, that's my thought on it. And it's like, I don't even know if his are fan fiction. I don't know if he wrote his based on real people or on what he... I honestly don't know. I didn't like Looking for Alaska. The Fault in Our Stars was fine. But like, it was okay. Like, it did what it was supposed to do. Like, that's what I think about John Green. He only did what he was supposed to do. Like, there was nothing else that I really got out of it. It was just like a fun little story.
I definitely see where you're coming from and why you feel that way. And I agree to an extent. I definitely think that the Manic Pixie Dream Girl is definitely a creation of John Green, and then for has skyrocketed to almost an unhealthy place. I
don't think he created it. I think he brought it back. I think Manic Pixie Dream Girls have always existed. Like Scott Pilgrim, I forget what her name is, but like she is very much a Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Ramona.
Ramona, yeah, that is a manic pixie dream girl, like to the nth degree.
I mean,
but like John Green put it, this is what John Green did with the manic pixie dream girl. He took it out of a heightened situation, whereas Scott Pilgrim versus the World is very comic booky, like very crazy, great movie. I love it. John Green put the manic pixie dream girl into real life situations and tried to pull it off as domestic, but it should not be.
Like, I can see that.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I think I love his books so much because they specifically give me that feeling of, at least for me, I know that the books are never going to be a situation that I find myself in, which is fine. It is not exactly situations that I want to be a part of. But I kind of like the idea that, like, although I would not be in this situation, I like thinking that this is something that could happen. This is something that is a possibility and therefore could be happening out here in our world. And so I really like that aspect of it.
You like how real it is?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so I really like the books in that way. I will say there was a point in time a few years back where I got really sick of his books because it almost seemed very recycled.
It's the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
It's a slightly damaged boy, and he meets a girl who just has it all together, except, oops, she doesn't, but then she does. Like, that's literally...
Yeah.
That is literally John Green's books, which, fine, it's a formula. It worked. And
use
like,
it.
And that's fine, but, like, that's the whole thing of, like, writers just being told to write what they know is good, and, like...
Uh-huh.
What if he wanted to do something else? I mean, J.K. Rowling's doing something else right now, and, like, it's not working. Well, we don't like her, but, like...
We know why it's not working.
We know... Well, it's not working because she's a TERF bitch. Okay, did we touch everything?
So, yeah, we pretty much touched everything. My last question... Actually, I guess before my last question, were there any other aspects of fandom I was about to say fandom society, fandom fan fiction culture, the community, or any topics at all relying on fan fiction that you would like to talk about?
Gosh, there are just so many. I've been involved with this for so long, and I've seen so many different takes. I've seen so many different challenges of the traditional art form that is writing in fan fiction. I read a story where it was literally just journal entries. I'm sure that's been done before, but like it was really interesting. Like it was like a boy who realizes he likes this girl, and it's just journal entries of him. Like they're at summer camp, and he's just like,
cool.
It's just his recounts of like, oh, she made this beaded necklace for a friend. I wonder if she'll make any more today. Like that kind of thing. What I would want everyone to know about fan fiction is that like how main media promotes fan fiction in a light that is hypersexual and bad is on purpose. It wants you to think that fan fiction, things that are written by normal people, will never be to the standard that the mainstream media will give you. I really and wholeheartedly believe that because I have read some stories that are just so profound and deep and complex, almost to the point that it's abstruse, and I can't understand how they came up with it themselves without a team behind them. So any, like, all of, like, the kissing booth was purposeful. Like, after is purposeful. There are certain things that they're trying to convince you of when it comes to fan fiction that you should never believe unless you've actually read a fan fiction yourself. And the thing is that I can't give recommendations of fan fiction authors because there's so many of them. There's so many. All you have to do is know what you like and search it, and you will find thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of stories on them from so many people just like you who maybe had the same thought process about this one interaction two characters had on a show and built a whole story around it. Like, there's just so much opportunity for different viewpoints that fan fiction gives us, and mainstream media making it look like one thing is purposeful and false. So, like, I would just know what you are interested in. I would go on Archive of Our Own before anywhere else and look it up and see what people are writing, because you might find out that you also like writing. And that's what happened to me in like 2006. So like, I would definitely jump in and see what the world is like before you let someone else decide for you what it's like.
Yeah.
That can be said about anything. Like, you can say that about like Star Wars or like Beastars. Like, literally just jump in and decide for yourself. Don't let anyone else decide for you what something is.
Yeah.
Like, let yourself figure out what you think about this. And if you don't like it, fine, leave. Like, you don't have to like
right.
You don't have to stay. Like, I really dislike how there are certain fan fictions being made into movies. I think it's so deliberate. I think, well, one, it's deliberate and it's trying to make fanfiction writers look like they're bad writers. And two, it's trying to make women writers look like they're bad writers and only want to write about certain things. So, like, I really do think that is purposeful, and I don't like it at all. So that's what I would say about fanfiction. I mean, there's so much more about it. It's such an awesome world. It's a really awesome world to see how people write down the world that they see, write down the worlds they create and the characters they create, the dialogues that they invent. Like, it's just, you're never going to get anything out of reading the same thing over and over again.
Right.
So just explore and see what you can find, and then you'll be influenced, hopefully.
Yeah.
And if you're looking to start writing fan fiction, just start writing. Like, that's literally all you have to do. Like, it wasn't even a thought for me. I just started writing, and that's how I started doing it. Like, I just started writing. And that's the most cliche shit a writer can tell you, but that is literally the mindset. If you start writing and you hate it, good. You already started writing, and you know you hated it. You would never know you hated it unless you didn't start writing. So all you have to do is right, and you will find out what works for you and what you like and what you don't like, and read, write and read. That's what Stephen King says. The two things you should do as a writer is read and write. It is selfish to think someone else has not thought this before you. You need to read and you need to write. And I would definitely recommend reading fan fiction first, because there's so many more voices out there than what's being published.
Definitely.
But yes, start writing today. If you have a thought, start writing today. This is so hustle culture. But like, write and
do it. Hustle, yeah.
Just do it. Like it doesn't even have to be a hustle. Write one sentence.
Yeah.
That's more than anything that you could like do if you didn't do it. So like, just do it. I love fan fiction. And I want to read it. So just send it to Dazita and then she'll send it to me.
There we go. Yeah. Perfect.
I'll read it.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask me?
I'm really glad that you brought up, because my question was going to be like, what advice would you give to someone who might be unsure about fan fiction and like writing it? But I'm really glad that you said that, because kind of like how I mentioned before, I'm not really, or I guess I thought I really wasn't someone who was creative, and I didn't understand what it meant for me to become creative and then how to kind of deal with the thoughts of like, well, am I being creative? How do I express this to other people? As if being creative meant that I had to have it validated by other people. And as I've mentioned on multiple episodes, I am currently in the process of writing a very long trilogy series of three books in their own, creating their own universe and world. And me starting that wasn't me starting on the books. I literally opened up a Google Docs document and really just started outlining almost as if I was writing an essay. Almost as if I was like preparing a speech, and really just kind of laid out all of these hundreds, if not thousands, of ideas that I had in my head. And then for me, I gave myself almost like a timeline of, I want to have all three of these books done in 10 years. Okay. And giving myself, as when I told people, like, wow, 10 years, that's so long. And for me, it was like, well, it's three books. Creating a world, creating characters. I think a big thing that I have heard from other people who are writers is they almost feel constricted by time and feeling that they need to get stuff out quickly so that people know that, you know, I'm telling someone that I'm writing and they haven't seen anything.
Right.
It doesn't matter if no one's seen it. As long as you are writing and you are happy and you are seeing it and are excited about it, just keep doing it.
And writing scaffolds, like, your writing will scaffold onto itself. Like, it's to write is to activate your brain. And yeah. Like, I don't know how I can make this any clearer. You're never going to write if you keep thinking. Like, you have to get something on the page. Like, I don't even care if it's just LOL.
Right.
You're instigating your brain. Like, you're activating your brain at that point in time. Like, me as a writer, I have, like, that second chapter I was talking to you about for mm-hmm. the story Sunday. I have 5 different files for it because I constantly keep coming up with new ways of framing the story. And I would not have any of that if I didn't start. Yeah. Like, it sounds like writers say this to each other all the time. We're always like, girl, you just gotta write. And it's like, not that easy. It is that easy.
It is.
Like, if you just get out of your head, like, just get out of your head and get it on paper. Like, because in your head, you can realize it as perfection and then it's there and then you never have to write it down. But you won't get anything out of it if you don't write it down. Like, how are you paying tribute to yourself as a writer if you're not allowing yourself to use your talent and you're just letting it rest in your head? Like you owe it to yourself to get this story out to somebody. Even if that somebody is you, if you get that story out to you, that's all who reads it. Fine. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about all my stories. Like, if I, when I finished, the first time I finished my first chapter story on fan fiction. And like, I had people like, oh my God, this was so great. Like, this was a great story. I loved it. It was the most satisfactory for me. Like, it was all for me at that point. And like, I could not have, even if I didn't get any comments, I would have been like, this is like the most satisfaction I've ever had, because I got it out of my head and it's there for me to read now. Like, it's it exists. It's part of the universe now. So like, it's such an achievement. So like, just if you feel like, even if you feel hesitant about fan fiction, like writing or writing in general, you still know you kind of want to write.
Yeah.
That's somewhere to start. Like, you know that you want to write something. I think the hesitance is the commentary, like like someone commenting on it. I think that's where all the hesitance comes from. I don't think it ever comes from like not wanting to write. I think it just comes from what people are going to say. The most important person is yourself.
Yes.
First and foremost, that is yourself. If you are satisfied with your writing and you want someone else to see it, that's all that matters. And if someone doesn't like it, someone doesn't like it.
Tough.
That's literally it. If someone doesn't like it, someone doesn't like it. And I definitely had that before. I remember I wrote a really bad story and someone said, like, this sucks. And that I went through the whole mindset of, like, I shouldn't be a writer. Why am I doing this? Like, I, you know, because one person said it sucked. But I know that I enjoyed writing that, even if I don't like it now. I enjoyed writing it. It was fun. And I know that I like writing. So even if you write something that's bad, you still like this. Like, you still like doing it.
There was this article that I came across maybe a year ago, around this time. Well, actually, I guess I came across it around the time when I was, when I was moving back to Maryland from Minnesota. And it's by this, I guess this writer, but not really, this author that I really like, named Emma Lord. And she writes articles for a website called bustle.com. And the article specifically is titled "An Open Letter to the Published Author Who Told Me to Stop Writing Fan Fiction." And it's such a great article because she talks about her passion with fan fiction and how it was kind of all taken down and crumbled by this author that she really admired and how she bounced back from it. I highly recommend people
look into it. I just looked her up and I have read something by her. She wrote "Why Fan Fiction Shaming is a Feminist Issue." Yeah. I was 11 years old when I set up my first fiction. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've read her before. She's
awesome. I really like her work. She's fantastic. She's done a bunch of different articles specifically about her own history and experiences with fan fiction. And they're all on bustle.com. Go and check it out. They have some incredible writers out there.
Oh yeah. And she wrote, about Imagines. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ugh, that's a whole other thing. Just like how, like, she, like what she talks about really is that reaction to fan fictions like 50 Shades of Grey, The Kissing Booth, etc., are symptoms of women not being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it. Like, women are able to take themselves seriously as writers on fan fiction websites, but once they're put into the forefront, they're still not taken seriously. So that goes for all categories, for like smut and at like real story plot lines, friendships, etc. Like, women don't know, like, how are women supposed to know these things? Because you've just been in the you've been in the house all day. Like, you know, like, so yes, fan fiction scrutiny is a feminist issue. She is 100% correct, because it's associated with women. We never associate fan fiction with men. Never. Like, when you think of a fan fiction writer, the first thing you think of is a young girl.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you think of. Because those are the most pop, ironically, the types of fan fictions that have been created that are the most popular are created by young girls.
Yeah.
Like, the ones that everyone uses, Imagines, were created by young girls. Journal entries, diaries were invented by girls. Like, that's a whole thing. Like, so she's 100% correct. Like, I would, yes, definitely read what she says about how fan fiction is resembling of a bigger issue than just girls wanting to write about sex. It's so much more. It's so much more than that.
So, Megan, I would like to ask you, what other fandoms would you, or I guess, period, what fandoms would you suggest other people look into? Or what fandoms are you really interested and excited in now?
Okay, I'm going to make my case for the BTS ARMY. So just... So the BTS ARMY is the BTS K-pop group's fandom. I mentioned at the beginning that I've been a fan of them since 2014, but I never really felt like I was a part of the fandom until I joined Twitter, which was in 2017. And BTS is humongous online. Like they are known as online like creators. Like one of the big reasons why they became so famous was because of their online presence. They've been the most mentioned account on Twitter for 3 years in a row. Like number one, like the whole time. That's how popular they are. There is a certain, well, it's kind of justified. The BTS ARMY is known for being rabid as fuck. Like they are known, like if you go after any of them, like any of the members, like we will dox you, or like we will, like that is not at all what it is. There are definitely within fandoms there are going to be people that are problematic and toxic and gross. That's just the law of averages, especially when a fandom is humongous like this one. There are going to be people that are weird, and we point out the weirdos that like get the same tattoos as the members, or the ones that stalk them, or the ones that take pictures of them when they're not on their public schedule.
Can we talk about the gentleman? I will have to look him up, but the gentleman in, I want to say he's from the UK. I could be wrong.
Ollie fucking, what's his name?
Is that his name? The gentleman who...
Ollie something. He is ostracized. Like, we do not consider him a part of us. Like, we make fun of him. Like,
wait, are we talking about the same guy? The guy who, like...
the one that made himself look like Jimin? Yes.
Yes!
We don't talk about him. Ollie London or something? I don't know.
Something like that, yeah.
He's a weirdo. We don't like him. Like, none of that.
Terrified.
But again, those weirdos are the ones that get to the front because they're weird. Like, that's the whole reason that they're at the front, because we keep giving them attention. We know this. We're in the mindset of, like... if we give anything attention, it's going to become popular because we're such a big fandom. So, where was I going with that? The people, so like the whole doxing thing and like the whole like canceling thing, like K-pop stans are always canceling people. That is very correct. Like people do that only in the K-pop fandom. Like I don't know why, they're weird. Like they just have access. Like they have access to that information. They're able to find out where people live and like they release that information. That does happen in the K-pop fandoms. I want to say for the BTS fandom though, the only reason that we would call somebody out and say that you should not be following this person is if they are actively racist and xenophobic toward the group. It's different if they don't like the group. If you don't like the group, fine. It's not for everybody. Like, not everyone wants to listen, like, to this type of music. Not everyone likes pop music. Not everyone likes K-pop. Like, that's fine. But when you talk about them giving us coronavirus by having a tour, we are going to call you out on it. Like, that's xenophobic and racist. Like, period. Like, if you're talking about how they say ching chong chong and we fall in love, we're going to call you out on it. If yeah. you say that their language is gibberish and then mock it on a live radio show, we are going to call you out on it. Only if it's racist and xenophobic and outwardly offensive, we will be rude to you because you deserve it. You deserve it at this point by putting yourself on the internet saying it. That's what I'll say about that. So, like, the fandom is humongous, very passionate, and organized. Like, the reason that... One of the reasons why they win everything is because the fandom is so organized.
Yeah.
We know how everything works. We know how the radio works. We know how the charts work. We know how streaming works. We know how everything works down to the equation. So we're able to take advantage of that. And the reason we know that is because they're not a Western artist.
Yep.
So we're taking advantage of these platforms and making them rise up because we know how they work. Otherwise, radio shows, television is not going to promote them. But now radio and television shows are promoting them because we understand how the system works.
Right.
So a fandom that is that big and that organized can be extremely intimidating to join. like we all have, like, as every fandom has, we have inside jokes. We are protective. We are weird. like, you know, we're very passionate. We're very passionate. If you like the music, that's it. Like, that's all we'll, like, that's literally it. Like, if you like the music and say you like the music, that, yes, that's all we're looking for. All we want you to do is listen to the music and decide for yourself. We don't want you to, like, look at this video of them being weird or, like, this video of them laughing or whatever. We want you to listen to the music first because we're all here for the music first. So that's really it. If you listen, the first thing, if you, like, this fandom is so much fun. It's so much fun to be a part of. There's so much creativity in this fandom. Fan fictions, I have not read any better fan fictions than the ones in this. Now, I know you feel weird about the real life ones.
Yeah.
I don't read the romance ones. I only read, like, the ones where they create their own world. Like, BTS created fan fiction about themselves. They created a whole universe. They call it the BU, the Bangtan universe.
Oh my gosh.
A whole separate storyline based in their music, where they created a whole, like, it involves all seven of them, and it's a time traveling story where one of them is a time traveler and he's reliving the same day every single day until he saves all of them from dying.
Groundhog's Day.
Well, it's not Groundhog Day. It's way better than Groundhog Day.
Oh, God.
No Bill Murray in here. But, like, the one member, he is responsible for all of the other members dying, and he's going to relive the same day over and over again until he fixes it. So the whole story is about him trying to fix it, and the songs relate to it. Like, there are certain themes, and, like, there's songs about, you know, there's a song about a friend committing suicide and not knowing, and the person is not knowing what to do afterwards. Mm-hmm. That's part of the storyline. Like, it's a literal, like, Wagnerian universe they've created because it's musically based, but it's also there. It has literature, it has journal entries, it has artwork. They just made a webtoon, and they're making a live action story as well, and they're making a game too. So, like, they created fan fiction about themselves, and, like, there's so much content. They put out so much content. They put out content every single day. This morning, three different things came out. Like, they're putting so much content out that it's just, like, a privilege, like, to be a fan of them, because they're putting so much work into their craft, and you can see it. It's not like now you can definitely see that they have companies with them, but, like, before, it was them. Like, they were working hard for you. So, like, you know, if you, like, are a fan of them, that you're going to get good stuff. So, like, I would definitely try, like, K-pop fans have a weird reputation on the internet right now, and it is justified 100%. Some people are weird as fuck on K-pop stan Twitter, but out of all of them, the BTS fandom is the most fun. So I would definitely listen to their music and then decide for yourself if you want to be a part of the fandom or just be a casual fan. Like, you know, you don't have to be in a fandom. Like, fandoms are fun, but, like, you can also just be, like, a casual fan. Like, no one, you're not hurting anybody.
Yeah. Are there any other fandoms that you would suggest, or even that you just want to talk about that you really like?
I'm in a weird place with the anime fandom right now. Like, okay. Like, I love, you know what? Let's talk about Megan Thee Stallion. So, Megan Thee Stallion likes anime. Now, yes, she. Do you not like Megan Thee Stallion?
I think she's fine.
You're about to like her. So, Megan Thee Stallion is a huge anime fan. She has, like, she watches all the big ones, and, like, she knows what she's talking about. Like, she did a photo shoot for Paper Magazine where she was Todoroki from My Hero Academia. Like,
that's so
she
cute.
She literally created an alter ego called Tina Snow that's based on Todoroki. Like, she's a humongous anime fan. Now, Megan Thee Stallion does not appear to be an anime fan. She's not wearing, like, the shirts. She's not pale. She doesn't wear glasses. Like, she doesn't appear to be an anime fan. So, of course, all these men in her comments keep telling her, like, oh, you don't really like anime. You're only saying it so you can get a man. And she has been so... She's been roasting the fuck out of these men. Like, she's basically saying, like, women don't like things, so you will like us. Like, Period.
Thank you.
Like she actually enjoys anime. Like, she's asking for anime recommendations. Like, she's, especially for Black women, like, women of color, or like at least dark skinned, are not seen to be people that are supposed to like anime. Anime is an East Asian and white person interest, mm-hmm. for some reason. Of course, white people colonize that too. But like, it's
shit.
But Megan Thee Stallion does not appear to be like a traditional anime fan. So of course they're like, you don't really like it. You're only doing it just so, like, you know, you can get men. And like, she has completely and entirely overturned that argument within like the year or two that she's been popular. Like, she's like, I like it. Like, she literally just, I like it, period. I just like watching anime. Like, these are my favorite series. I love these characters. Right. Like she talks about the favorite thing about her favorite thing about animes is that a lot of it has men that will fight for their women. And she says that she doesn't see that a lot in traditional media. She doesn't see men fight uh-huh. to the death for their women. And that's what she loves about anime. She said that in a Crunchyroll interview the other day. She did say she doesn't like Sailor Moon, which really polarized people from her. But it makes sense, because Sailor Moon is a little outdated when it, like, at least the dub is. The dub is very like, I'm a girl and I can fight too. But in the sub, it's very like serious and like awesome and like strong, grounded women fighting. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the dub, it's like, I'm Usagi Tsukino. I'm 14 years old and I'm like a superhero. Like, you know, that's kind of like what the dub is. So yeah. Like, I understand why she doesn't like Sailor Moon. It's not at all what she would watch. So like, the anime fandom, when Megan Thee Stallion like made it clear that she likes anime, I was very disappointed. So like, if they think that Megan Thee Stallion, like, if they're not able to accept that Megan Thee Stallion likes anime, are they going to accept that I like anime?
Right.
Like, of course, like, girls are going to like anime. The boys are dreamy AF. Like, right? They're so dreamy. Like, why wouldn't we like them? So, like, yeah, the anime fandom, I would definitely, like, if you watch anime, you don't have to be a part of the anime fandom. Like, you can like it however you like. Like, but, like, I've never really, like, every time I say I like anime out loud, I get scared.
Oh, no!
I still get scared. Cool. Well, it's not because I'm not afraid for people to know. It's because I don't think people will believe me. Like, it's that whole mentality where, like, you know how I said, like, you don't know Sub-Zero's blood type. So, you don't know. Like, if I don't know that Goten was Goku's second son, then I don't deserve to be an anime fan. Like, it's that whole gatekeeping issue that I have with the anime fandom. So like, that I would say, if you're a woman and you like anime, right now is the time to say it, because Megan Thee Stallion has completely shattered everybody when it comes to women liking anime.
If you're comfortable with it, where could listeners find you?
I mean, like, my Instagram handle is my Sri Lankan name, so like, I don't know how you like, do you have video on yours, or is it just audio?
Nope, it's all audio.
Okay, so like, if you could just like put my Instagram at, I guess, but like, I don't really.
You can spell it out for them if you like.
Okay, it's my Instagram at is Asangani Colony. That's Asangani. Kalani. All one word, nothing in between. I am not linking my BTS stan account, because no one needs to see that. yeah, really, Instagram is the only place I would be. Snapchat, no one needs to see that. So just my Instagram at Asangani Colony. I post some pictures there sometimes. I don't really post much. I'm not very, as much as I'm so passionate about fanfiction, I'm not very public about it. So, like,
okay.
My old fanfiction account is, like, no one needs to read that stuff. but, yeah, that's really
you got it. So, if you guys want to find Megan and maybe talk to her a little bit about some fanfiction, definitely hit her up on Instagram. And
DMs are open, I think. I think they are.
You will find out if they are open. Well, Megan, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast with us.
Of course. Yeah, I feel like I've never talked about fan fiction this much in my life out loud, like, ever. It's like, I know way too much about it.
No, that's perfect. I love it. I I knew I wanted you on the podcast, and I had mentioned before that you were the first person to ever personally reach out to me about being on the podcast, and your topic was so exciting to me because I love talking about fan fiction, because I feel like I know a good amount of fan fiction, but mm-hmm. I definitely knew that you being a writer would know so much more than I did. And I love that.
Oh boy, and, do I know.
And I really loved having this opportunity to reconnect with you and really be able to kind of get back together and really have this kind of common interest to really talk about. It's been super exciting for me just the last few weeks to reconnect with you.
Yay! Oh my gosh, yes, that's so exciting to know. Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun. This is my first podcast I've ever been on. So
you were wonderful. You were an amazing guest. So great that Megan will definitely be back for more topics and more discussions.
Definitely talk about Degrassi. We definitely talk about Degrassi. I have got to get some things off my chest about Degrassi.
Thank you all so much for listening to my very first podcast. Let's Talk Fandoms is produced by Tazita Gant, created by Tazita Gant, edited by Tazita Gant, hosted by Tazita Gant, cover art done by Psych Arelic on Instagram. Intro music done by Riri Retro, also on Instagram. You can find all of their links in the description of this podcast on each episode. Remember to keep talking fandoms with us, along with everyone else you know. You can find Let's Talk Fandoms Podcast on Instagram and Fandoms Podcast on Twitter. We would love to hear your feedback by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and any other place you are able.